Matter up that the courts can take is Boss versus Commonwealth.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Ms. Adelphia, good morning again.
Good morning.
Mr. Collins, how much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
Just a couple minutes, Your Honor, if that's okay.
Would that be two?
2 minutes, yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
All right, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Your Honors, if this is the court, my name is Christopher Collins. I represent the appellant, Tony Bose, in this case. And this also is a fairly, it's a statutory interpretation, I believe, case, based upon what this court ruled in 2 years ago in Wilson versus Commonwealth. Mr. Bose was on probation when a variety of allegations were made that he had violated the terms of that probation, and he was served notice with that probation. While waiting for other legal situations to be taken care of, his probation term expired. And it was not until well after 21 days after the expiration of his probation period that the court actually took up his probation.
Counsel, what do we do with 19.2306 that indicates it could either be the probationary period or the suspended sentence period? It's read as an or, so it doesn't seem to be necessarily something that would support the argument that we're limited solely to the probation period.
But for the existence of 304, Your Honor, I would agree.
Okay.
304 exists. The legislature wrote 304 specifically. It's a one-sentence code that is for increasing or decreasing the probationary period. And so the legislature created 304, did not put any kind of tolling of the statute like they did in 306. And so therefore, you have to read 304 separate from 306.
But doesn't 304 just require that any modification be done with the person's presence, so that they're given and informed rather than it being done sort of sui sponte by the court?
Well, Your Honor, once again, it's interpretation of the statute, I believe, but once again, it does not say that. It says the court may subsequently increase or decrease the probationary period or any condition.
Let me ask this. The order does not impose a specific sentence of suspension, does it?
No, it did, sir. This was subject of a plea agreement where the court suspended a certain amount of time and placed him on 2 years specific probation upon his release from incarceration.
It specified the period of probation, but it didn't specify the period of suspension.
I believe it did, Your Honor. I believe it did.
Am I wrong here? I think I'm reading the right one. It said the defendant is 14 years of the sentence of incarceration is suspended. The defendant is placed on probation to commence upon his release from incarceration for 3 years unless sooner released by the court or probation officer. Is that the applicable language?
I think so, Your Honor. So you have 14 years of suspensible of time that could be revoked.
We have 14 years suspended.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3 years of probation, but the court did not specifically state how long that period of suspension was.
I believe it did by saying, well...
Now, we've said that period of suspension and period of probation are separate concepts, and that you can't have probation without suspension. But we've also said that when the court does not specifically express a period of suspension, the period of suspension is the maximum term of the offense for which he could have been punished.
And I would say, Your Honor, that pursuant to the plea agreement...
Well, the plea agreement's not an order.
Well, I understand, Your Honor, but it is under contract. The court accepted the plea agreement, and the court did not modify that plea agreement.
But the court speaks to its orders.
That's true, Your Honor. And so the benefit of the bargain here was, in lieu of taking the case to trial, Mr. Bose accepted a term of probation of 3 years.
Which he got.
We're talking about a term of suspension, and... It seems to me if we apply our previous case law, which we're obligated to do, we have to conclude that this person had a period of suspension of 20 years. No, I'm sorry, these are possession with intent, 80 years.
Because the court order was silent on whether or not he could possibly have his probation revoked over 80 years. But once again, Your Honors, I think what the argument that I would make back is to say I understand the court's rulings from that. However, because this was due to a plea agreement where there was an agreement made between the Commonwealth and the court accepted that agreement, contract law would apply. My client did not accept an 80-year.
Did the plea agreement specify the term of suspension?
No, Your Honor. I would believe that it simply stated how long that he would be under the guise of a probationary period.
So he could be on. He could be on probation for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, he hasn't done anything, but on the fourth year, he commits a crime. But that period of suspension is still in effect.
So if I understand the court's, and I've read the case law on that as well, Your Honor, but I think that if my client were just wait till the third year and 1 day after his release from incarceration, he committed a crime, and the Commonwealth were to find out about that, then they could come back and revoke the remainder of the 14 years. And I don't believe that if pursuant to a plea agreement, that's not what I think was intended when you have a suspension.
We can't look to the plea agreement. We actually have to look to the order. If the order is silent on the period of suspension, as Judge Petty has indicated, aren't we looking towards that period of time in which any action the Commonwealth may be allowed to take?
Well, Your Honor, I understand what because the reason I keep referring back to the plea agreement because of contract law. The court accepted the contract between the Commonwealth and the defendant.
You haven't raised an appeal on the issue of whether the order entered by the court violated the plea agreement. So
correct.
That horse is out of the barn.
Right.
We're only looking at the order.
Yes, sir.
Assuming that the order did, in fact, comply with whatever agreement was made.
And, Your Honor, when you say that, you're right. The court order is silent on whether or not in the 80 years after his conviction date.
But the order was entered at a time when 304 was not the only statute that applied. 306 did apply. Mm-hmm. It was in existence and valid, was it not?
Yes.
Well, how do you read it out of the complete statutory structure dealing with probation and suspended sentences?
Well, because, Your Honor, I think that in the court in Wilson, as well as with a standalone code section of 304, when you say the process to bring a violation of an individual's probation, we've spelled that out very clearly.
But isn't there law, clear law, on how you treat a whole body of law addressing the same issue? I can even cite it. Now, there are multiple statutes dealing with an issue. The court must view the entire body of legislation and statutory scheme to determine the intent of the legislature in passing a law. Statutes dealing with specific subject matter must be construed together. So if you construe those two statutes together, does it not follow that 306 would come into play in a period of suspension, notwithstanding the end of probation, does it not?
Well, I think it would, obviously. But for 304, I think that under 306, the legislature clearly...
But for 304, I guess I never read it the way you are reading it. How do you come to that conclusion? There's nothing in the statute itself that says it is not to be read under normal legal principles that we read the whole body of law on this issue. But how do you get there?
Well, Your Honor, because the legislature specifically wrote a one-sentence code section,
yes,
dealing with the increasing and decreasing of a probation period. I'm not arguing, Your Honor.
There's no legislative history that suggests what that means.
That's true, Your Honor.
Legal principles about construing multiple sections of the code dealing with the same subject matter is intact. It's been intact for many, many centuries.
Well, but I also want to make sure that the argument is clear here, Your Honor. It is not that the court did not have jurisdiction to revoke his probation.
Yes.
The court clearly did.
Yes. I understood that.
Okay.
Quarreling that there was no jurisdiction to revoke.
Right.
It's the extension of the period subsequently to a longer period than he had initially. That's what you're quarreling with. Under 306.
Yes, ma'am. It's the extension of his probation that we're quarreling with, that the court lacked jurisdiction to do that. And
counsel, let me ask you a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Suppose that it's not something where the probation officer's giving a violation report,
mm-hmm,
or past a probation period. You would agree that even within a suspended sentence period,
mm-hmm,
that if the Commonwealth says, hey, judge, he now has a new conviction and we are show causing for that conviction, there's no problem with that.
Correct, Your Honor. The statutory theme, I think the case law bears out that there are a variety of times that an individual who has suspended jail time over his or her head can be brought to court at multiple times, up to a year after they're off probation or even after their suspended time is over. 306 clearly spells that out. The issue here, I think, is that the legislature wrote 304, which specifically talks about extension or decreasing a person's sentence, which is a standalone sentence from 306. If 304 is part of 306, I think that could be read together. But clearly, the legislature said we have a specific statute for extending an individual's probation period.
Like you said, under 306, the court can extend, can it not, with conditions?
Under C, it says may place depend upon terms and conditions or probation. And,
well, that's what happened.
And Your Honor, the argument here is that under
subject matter jurisdiction. What kind of jurisdiction is missing here?
So if the court were to look at Wilson, where the court ruled that 21 days had passed before the court decided to extend that individual's probation, then you would say then the court had to act at least if they wanted to extend his probation, they had to act within 21 days of the date of the expiration of his probation. Because they did not, then his extension of probation is now, they lack the jurisdiction to do so. And whether or not, I know that the Commonwealth raised the issue in the original pleading that was filed that may have been pro se that I picked up after being court appointed, it was subject matter jurisdiction, and that was the basis of the brief. So, but I believe that's it may be an inartful word to use, subject matter jurisdiction. But the fact of the matter is, if the court lost its jurisdiction over the defendant because that 21 days had run, then I think the court can't extend his probationary period. Obviously, everything else under 306 still applies. I'll keep the remainder for my rebuttal time.
Thank you. Ms. Adelfio.
Good morning again. Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. May it please the Court. To touch on something that Judge Annunziata just raised, I want to note that the Frederick County Circuit Court did have subject matter jurisdiction to hold the probation revocation hearing because a revocation hearing falls under the classes of cases that circuit courts have subject matter jurisdiction.
When we talk about jurisdiction, there's no greater quote than it's a word of too many meanings.
Yes.
Are we really talking about personal jurisdiction? If this defendant was not on probation or subject to a suspended sentence, then the court had no personal jurisdiction over this person to incarcerate him.
Yes, Your Honor. Or I think that
which may be waived.
Or active jurisdiction, I think, is another.
One of the two. It's a waivable concept of jurisdiction.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in this case, Frederick County's subject matter jurisdiction did not expire until I had said 2054, which was the maximum sentence that could have been imposed for the distribution of drugs. Judge Petty suggested 80 years. Either way,
40 on it's been a long time since I did a drug offense.
But as the court has noted, when a period of suspension is not named in an order, the code suggests that you can revoke a sentence for the maximum possible sentence that can be imposed.
Is that really what it says? Because it says, in any case in which the court has suspended the execution or imposition of sentence, the court may revoke the suspension of sentence for any cause deemed sufficient that occurred at any time within the probation period or within the period of suspension fixed by court. If neither a probation period or period of suspension was fixed, then maximum punishment. Now, here we have a period of probation. So doesn't 306 limit the court's authority to revoke to that period of probation?
Well, if that's the court's interpretation, it's just the period, the suspended sentence is also provided. So
there was no period of suspension, was there?
No, but within the 10 years of the suspended sentence.
But the court did not impose a specific period of suspension, then we look to the period of probation. If neither, then we look to maximum sentence. And my reading of this is the court didn't impose a period of suspension, but did impose a period of probation. So that becomes the controlling period within which the court can revoke.
Well, if that's the court's interpretation, I'd suggest that the because the offense happened within the time of the named probation, and the hearing was held within 1 year of that, then the court still had subject matter or still had active jurisdiction to hear the matter. And I did argue that on brief. I think I argued in the alternative. So because the probation violation or the good cause occurred during the period of probation, just because there was a delay in the holding of the probation revocation hearing does not entitle a defendant the opportunity to avoid the jurisdiction of the court. And in this case, there was 8 continuances between the probation officers filing with the court of the probation violation report, and it just so happened that the hearing happened 33 days after the probation period ended. That said, Code Section 19.2-306 provides for a hearing to be held within 1 year of the end of the probation, the termination of the probation period. That's what happened in this case. And it also provides for a court to impose the suspended sentence revoke the suspended sentence, reimpose a period of the suspended sentence, and then...
I'll get back to that, though, a minute. Before you go forward, make sure I'm with you on this little path. When the defendant was before the court for the first revocation hearing, in which there was an extended period of probation imposed, which is the disposition under challenge here.
Yes, sir.
I thought the court actually resuspended some of the terms. Wouldn't that be the period of suspension?
Are we talking about the first,
the court revoked? Let's see. I'm talking about the June 23, 2017 hearing, the revocation hearing. The court revoked the previously suspended sentences, but resuspended 4.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that the period of suspension?
Your Honor, I think that the BOSA's challenge is that along with that period of suspension imposed, the court could not also impose a new period of probation. I think that the period of suspension that we're discussing is the suspended sentence that was rendered on August 13th, 2014.
Okay.
And perhaps I'm not understanding the court's question. And I wanted to return to something that Judge Petty suggested.
I'm looking for the period of suspension. I misread that.
You conceded in your brief there was no period of suspension. I thought.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned that there was a 14-year period sentence, and I think it's 10 years.
Did he I had, get the wrong sentence?
I think the court said, I'm going to sentence you to 5 years on each of your distribution charges. I'm going to impose all but 2 years on one of them, and I'm going to suspend all the time for the second charge. So he was sentenced to serve an active sentence of 2 years. Upon his release from jail in that 2-year sentence, he was placed on supervised probation for 2 years, and that supervised probation ended on May 21st, 2017. In the meantime, in October of 2015, shortly after his release from prison, he had a new charge, and it's not clear exactly where. I don't think it was Virginia. It might have been D.C. or Maryland. Which he admitted to, and the court agreed that he was in violation of the terms of his probation during his probation period. He admitted that at the June 2017.
That's the one I just referred to. At that revocation hearing, what happened?
At that revocation hearing, the court revoked his previously suspended sentence and re-suspended 4 years, so he was given four more years to serve.
A suspension. That's a suspension period, is it not? And that's not under challenge. And he gave him probation for another 5 years.
So,
is that not so?
Yes, Your Honor. So
I'm not looking for any concessions legally or anything. I just admit I have the facts straight.
So
he did suspend.
Yes, Your Honor.
Resuspend the term of incarceration.
Yes.
4 years worth.
And I'm sorry, I misunderstood your
question. Can I jump in here because I am thoroughly confused? I was looking at the order that is on, I think, page one.
Oh, am I looking at something wrong? I'm just looking at what the...
I'm looking at the defendant's sentencing order on page 197 of the appendix.
Yes.
I'm looking at 191.
And apparently that's the wrong sentencing order. April of 2017.
Yes, Your Honor.
Where is the sentencing order that we're talking about?
100 through 101, or 102, and that was cited on brief, Your Honor.
Okay, I apologize.
And that's the August 13th, 2014 sentencing order.
I got the wrong order.
I'm on the right order then.
Yeah. Judge Annunziata, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. So, yes, at that June 2017 hearing, pursuant to 19.2-306A, the court imposed a new period of suspension, or imposed a sentence and also suspended another portion of sentence.
Added probation.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's the imposition of probation that Mr. Bose is challenging. And he's suggesting that the court did not have the authority to impose. Perhaps they had the authority to revoke the sentence, but he's saying, no, the trial court did not have the authority to impose any new period of probation. That reading of Code Section 19.2-306 renders the portion of 306 that's renders meaningless the portion of 306 that allows a court to impose a period of probation when it suspends a sentence. And I'm afraid I might have muddled things, but... So, I would suggest to the court that any challenge of the exercise of the circuit court's subject matter jurisdiction was waived because it was not the subject of his assignment of error. He only challenged the subject matter jurisdiction of the trial court, and as we were discussing earlier, he didn't challenge the exercise of that subject matter jurisdiction.
Which would only go to what?
I think that the use of subject matter jurisdiction he limited his challenge to whether or not the court had the authority to essentially have the probation revocation hearing.
And now, the exercise of the jurisdiction, other than the court erred in imposing 5 additional years of probation, the only exercise of jurisdiction that I think is at issue, that it was erroneous.
Again, we're coming down to the term of our jurisdiction, which is rather broadly used and sometimes incorrectly used as it relates to subject matter versus just jurisdictional issues.
And well, on the exercise is when you have subject matter to deal with probation and revocation, you can do that. But if you do it incorrectly in exercising that authority, you come up to the Court of Appeals and say, yeah. But judge did it incorrectly. Isn't that the exercise of jurisdiction?
But his assignment of error...
It's not in this case, though.
That's correct. And I point to the court... I know it's only persuasive value, but the court recently just decided Silvius, which essentially dealt with the exact same issue, which is on appeal here, which addresses the fact that the defendant in Silvius only attacked the subject matter jurisdiction or lack thereof, rather than the exercise of the statutory authority.
Didn't that case hold that it was broad enough? You can deal with both subject matter and exercise?
That was not my reading of the case, Your Honor.
Okay, just wondered.
I think they found that it was waived pursuant to 5A:12.
Which part was waived?
I don't want to misspeak, Your Honor. So court's indulgence. I just want to make sure I'm reading the quote that I offered to the court. So Silvius limited the analysis to whether the circuit court had subject matter jurisdiction to extend the probation after the probation period had expired, but while Silvius was still subject to a suspended sentence, where the assignment of error only challenged the circuit court's subject matter jurisdiction to act.
So
that's only persuasive authority, obviously, but I'd suggest to the court that this assignment of error that only addresses the lack of subject matter jurisdiction is not broad enough to challenge the circuit court's exercise of that subject matter jurisdiction. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd reiterate to the court that pursuant to 19.2-306, the trial court had the statutory authority to impose a period of probation along with suspending the sentence. I also just want to, sounded like I was wrapping up. I really am not wrapping up. I do want to address quickly. I think 19.2-304 is basically the statute that gives a defendant the opportunity to come into court and say, Your Honor, the situation has changed. Please consider modifications to my probation.
But doesn't 304 require that if, in fact, there are modifications, that the defendant be notified?
Your Honor, that's a hearing be held where both the Commonwealth and the defendant are present. I think,
but it requires actually that the defendant be present, doesn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's what happened here. But typically, what happens under 19.2-304 is that the defendant comes in and says, "Your Honor, I'd like to modify the conditions of my probation because I'd like to move, and I'm currently prohibited from leaving the state of Virginia, or somehow the conditions have become more onerous." And this code section gives trial courts the opportunity to consider modifications of probation conditions. It does not limit in any way the ability of the trial court to impose a new period of probation after a probation violation has been found and a new period of suspended sentence has been order. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Collins.
Please, the court. I know that the Commonwealth brought up Silvius, but I'll bring up the Wilson case where the court also took up the issue of is this subject matter jurisdiction or is it regular jurisdiction, and the court found that subject matter jurisdiction was appropriate in that particular case. In its ruling. So, and I get that it's a term of art, but I think that the court understands that the purpose of the appeal here, which is, did the court, after the expiration of the defendant's probationary period, the supervisory period, can the court then incur a new clause upon him after that 21 days, after it loses the jurisdiction over the defendant? And that's the argument here, Your Honors. Because the legislature instituted 19.2-304, which is once again just one line code section, there's no ifs, buts, or how it's implemented. It just gives grants authority to the courts to do the following thing. So it is subject matter jurisdiction because it's granted to it by the statute, by the legislature. And because that is a standalone from 306, I think you have to read them separately because that's what the legislature intended. If they did not intend that, they could have, when they wrote 306, they could have certainly struck 304. And with that, I will conclude unless anybody has any questions.
Any questions, Judge?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.